Well, go, baby, go, baby, go, baby, go.
Hey everybody, welcome to Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure. I'm Matt Meyer, I'm a farm's dumb. Oh, that's Dory.
I'm Dory Shafrir. My eggs are old.
Great. Here we are, doing a podcast. Thanks so much for writing and telling us how much you love me, and mostly me.
Wait, what?
I don't know that any of that happened. I don't read the emails until I see them in front of me at the podcast.
Are you feeling insecure?
A little bit, you know.
Why?
It's just hard doing all this yoga. I just want to feel loved.
I know Matt has gotten really into yoga, and it's like one of my favorite things that's happened in a long time.
I'm not really into yoga.
He's super into yoga. He's doing it every day.
I just do yoga every day.
In his office.
In my office with a yoga mat.
And
now I'm like, I need a new yoga mat. I need a better yoga mat.
I can make some suggestions.
Great.
And then when I was in San Francisco last week, he went into the closet in my office and found the yoga blocks that I had because he needed some yoga blocks.
I needed a yoga block.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm really opening up and stretching that right hip.
I get it.
Got to have a block. You know, and I won't need a block if I keep doing it.
Right. Yeah, that's how it works. How did you stumble upon this yoga?
How did I stumble upon this yoga? I'm doing the DDP yoga, Diamond Dallas Page, former professional wrestler of the WCW and then later the WWE. Yeah, I don't know. I saw it when they did a documentary about Jake the Snake, who was in rough shape. And DDP kind of took it upon himself to make Jake the Snake do yoga for a long period of time to get him back into a reasonable human being shape.
And oh, wow.
Then he was on Shark Tank pitching this yoga thing and... Then I was...
Did anyone invest?
I don't remember. I don't think so. But I, you know, I'm always looking for something that I can do without leaving the house.
Right.
So, and I am particularly out of shape lately, so it felt weird to just go back into lifting weights. Because I'm like, well, and then...
Because you've done that before and gotten injured.
Yes. Yeah, so I've decided to do yoga and doing a little bit of running.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to have to go for a run tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. I'm going to try to run the half marathon in Las Vegas in November.
I'm just so pleased about all of this.
I'm glad you're pleased, honey. It's really why I do everything.
No, it's not.
You ask my therapist. He thinks it's mostly I do all the things because of you. So.
Really?
Yep.
What about Bo?
Bo is an extension of you. When Bo's unhappy, Dory's unhappy.
That's true.
Yep.
Hmm.
Anyway, thanks for coming out to see Dory in San Francisco.
Yeah. I met Mary, who did all those, all that data for us.
We love data. That's the name of that episode.
Yeah.
I think it was called They Love Data. No, that wasn't the name
of that
episode.
Different episode.
That was a different episode.
Yeah.
Just about how
doctors love data
they need, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, Mary came to my Madewell appearance.
That's great.
It was very nice of
did
her.
Did she pick up a boyfriend blouse while she was there?
No, but she did pick up a copy of the book.
Oh, that's great.
And I have two more appearances coming up.
Okay.
For all of you people in Chicago.
Chi-town.
I will be at Madewell.
Oh.
This Friday.
Oh, my God.
From 5 to 7, signing books.
5 p.m. to 7 p.m.?
Yes.
And you're leaving in the morning from here.
Yes.
This is a very... I'm just very worried about this situation.
Okay. I understand.
Guys, I hope that she makes it into town. Do you know what it's like to get from the airport in Chicago into Chicago?
I'm flying into Midway.
Uh-huh.
I hear there's a train. I don't know. I've been to Chicago twice in my life.
What time do you land?
I have no idea.
In Chicago.
I don't know any. I forget all of the details.
Well, I hope that she makes it. So go to Madewell at 5 p.m. on Friday in Chicago.
It's the Rush Street location, if that means anything to anyone.
I'm sure it means a lot of things to a lot of people who live there.
It's the
Rush Street location. And rush on over there and see if she got there.
And then on Sunday... June 11th at 1 p.m. I'm going to be on a panel at the Printer's Row.
Sunday?
Sunday.
When do you get back to Los
Late
Angeles?
On Sunday.
Are we going to have to record like Thursday?
We might.
Oh, boy.
Or we could record late on Sunday. I feel like...
None of that's appealing.
I know.
So I think
I keep
Thursday
hearing
is.
A weird like clicking.
I don't.
Hmm.
You know, okay. If you don't mention it, no one's attention is drawn to it.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
There is no clicking.
All right. Anyway, the Printers Row Lit Fest, Sunday at 1 p.m. I'm going to be on a panel. You can just go to, I believe it's printersrow.org and find out all the information. I believe it's free.
What are you going
to
do with your Saturday in Chicago?
You know, I was just thinking about that. I was
go to a Cubs game.
Oh, I have a Saturday in Chicago. Well, Saturday, so late, so from like 5 to 7 on Saturday, there's a reception for all the authors that are at the festival.
Okay.
So I'm going to do that. And then Saturday night, I'm going to hang out with my old college friend Pete and his wife Kim. Kim just happens to be the moderator of my panel the next day.
That's an amazing coincidence.
She's also a novelist, wonderful writer. She wrote a viral essay for Salon a few years ago about leaving her son in the car while she ran in to run an errand and getting arrested.
Yeah. Well, we all have lapses in judgment.
Anyway, they're great. I never get to see them.
I don't even like leaving Beau in the car when I go into 7-Eleven.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, one of the two times I've been to Chicago was for their wedding. Uh-huh. Like, 12 years ago.
Chicago is a great town. I love it and really enjoy the area around Wrigley.
Never been.
It's very Boston-like.
Mm. I mean, I feel like I know
more, it. But better. Like,
I feel like I
bigger.
Know it from House Hunters.
Yes, we all know it from House Hunters.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm pretty familiar with it from House Hunters, but...
The lake effect.
Haven't actually spent much time there. I then spent a day there when I was reporting my story about night terrors, because there was, like, this renowned sleep expert who lived in Chicago.
There's a good theater scene there.
I've been to Second City.
Yeah, I was talking about theater.
Like Steppenwolf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the theater. Pivens. The Pivens, the Cusacks.
Oh, sure. I've heard of them.
David Schwimmer usually is directing a play there for some reason.
Isn't Vince Vaughn from there, too?
I feel like Vince Vaughn is from the South.
Really?
Maybe ended up in Chicago for college.
Did the breakup take place in Chicago?
Yes, it did.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm Googling Vince Vaughn.
All right, we're all Googling Vince Vaughn. Vince, if you're listening, write in. Matt and Dory at gmail.com or Dory and Matt. At gmail.com. You can also call us, Vince Vaughn, if you'd like to.
413-461.
Baby. There we go.
Vince Vaughn is from Minneapolis.
Oh, why did I think he was from the South?
Not far from Chicago, but not Chicago.
Similar diet.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, similar diet.
Love the food in Chicago. There's a Weber Grill restaurant.
Really?
Yeah, with a giant Weber grill on the outside of it.
Huh. So, yeah, if I mean, I don't know. What else? I don't know what I should do on Saturday in Chicago.
It sounds like you're doing stuff. During the day, you could go to the museum.
During the day, I have no plans.
Go stare at that painting that Ferris Bueller was staring at.
Maybe go to the Art Institute.
Maybe you should pretend to be Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Get into a fancy restaurant. Have a day of it.
Yeah.
Go see a Wrigley game. I bet maybe the Cubs aren't in town. I don't know. They have a lot of day games, though. So.
I think they are in town because my friend, who's also going to be there that weekend, was saying something about seeing a game on Sunday.
Oh, well.
I might also feel like going to some panels at the book festival.
It just sounds like there's a lot happening.
There's a lot happening. So I'm going to be gone Friday to Sunday, and then that's my last trip for a while.
Please go see Dory on her last trip for a while.
We have a little bit of other business.
Oh, okay.
Before we get going. So I had a thought about our promised bonus episode.
Yeah.
Because we're at like, I think we're around 850 all in.
That's very close.
Yeah. So what I thought is, given all of the issues surrounding leaving a review, what if we just did a bonus episode when we hit 1,000?
Okay. I was planning on us doing a bonus episode when we hit, sorry, this is a long text thread I'm now on.
Okay, maybe don't look at that while we're podcasting.
I don't even know who it's from, but it seemed interesting. What were we just
bonus episode.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking about doing one when we hit 1 million downloads.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right, well, throwing that out there. And, you know, of course, if you support us on Patreon, I believe it's above the $25 and above per month, you get a bonus mini episode every month. So just, you know, throwing that out there.
Great.
Yeah. So that is some business. Mm-hmm. Join our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/excellentadventure. And Matt already mentioned our emails and phone numbers, so I don't have to mention those again. So last week we talked about Bo.
We did.
A lot. Well, not a lot. We actually mentioned it, but we asked if people had advice. Mm-hmm. Guess what?
We got inundated.
A lot of people had advice. So what I think we should do is I think we should put in the show notes like the time that we talk about Bo, because some people might not want to hear all about dogs for a few minutes. You know what I mean?
So when do you want to talk about Bo?
I want to talk about him right now.
Well, you know, we just, I try to remember to put in the episode discussion starts at.
Yeah. Well, this week we can just say Bo discussion.
Okay. I also think about, I think I'm thinking of Star Trek. I don't actually think I do that for this podcast.
I think we keep forgetting to do that for this podcast.
Sorry, everybody. Sorry, we've ruined your day.
Anyway, yeah. So first of all, thank you all for your wonderful suggestions about Bo. Seems like a lot of people have reactive dogs.
Maybe dogs are inherently reactive.
Except for big, dumb golden retrievers.
Yes. Which, you know, I like big, dumb retrievers.
Yeah, sure. Who doesn't? So I selected a few emails and a couple voicemails.
Okay.
In the dog area.
The must love dogs area.
So if you're not interested in dogs, you can fast forward.
Just look at the episode description.
You'll
see when dog time is over.
But if you are interested in dogs, you're about to get a wealth of information.
Okay.
Honey, are you ready?
I hope so.
Okay. Hello.
Hi.
Here are some thoughts, suggestions, Rebo. I'm not a dog trainer, but I have a little dog walking business, and one of my own dogs has issues with strangers. She's also a little pit bully looking, and because of this, elicits some fear responses from people that can intensify her stranger danger. Not sure how old Bo is, but I've noticed that male dogs can get a little more fighty with other dogs when they are around two. Mm-hmm. We've heard this.
Yeah.
Daycare can be a stressful experience for dogs with underlying anxiety. Bo might do better sticking with his dog walker, a more controlled environment, until his anxiety subsides. We hadn't considered that, but I don't know. He still seems excited about going to daycare.
He loves going in there.
Yeah.
He also loved leaving it.
True. Is Bo treat motivated? Yes.
Okay.
If so, have you tried taking him to the vet when he doesn't have an appointment and treating him for good, calm behavior? Also, I would switch vets. My dog is also sensitive to people
who
give off weird
today.
Vibes. Vets shouldn't give off weird vibes. Yeah. So we ended up calling the old dog trainer, and she came today for a session. And this was one of the things she said, that we should switch vets and also take Bo to the vet when he doesn't have an appointment, just to like make him think it's a happy place.
Yeah. Acclimate him to the joy of veterinary medicine.
Yeah. Do you bring treats on walks? It would be helpful to treat Bo as soon as you see another dog or person before he reacts. That this way, he'll get used to checking in with you before reacting to other dogs and strangers. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is something that we do. Mm-hmm. That Matt has been resistant to.
It's not that I've been resistant to. I just walk out the door so fast with him in the morning that I... Usually, the second I'm out the door, I'm like, I don't have the treats. And then I just go, eh, whatever. And then we go. And we just do a lot of avoidance. And he's pretty issue-free.
Yeah, but I mean, as the trainer said, I think it's good to start kind of letting him, like teaching him how to deal with people.
Acclimating.
Yeah, acclimating him.
Sure.
And then this woman, Annie, also says, my dog responded well to those calming pheromone collars. The brand we use is Adaptil, but there are probably others now. I would say it took 20% of the edge off, which was enough to keep her focus on me and reduce her reactionary responses. So that's interesting.
I was not aware of the existence of such a thing.
Yeah, apparently they like emit.
Could I wear them?
Yeah.
Great.
I think you would calm down. And then she says, P.S. I would keep training methods positive with Bo and avoid boot camps that use e-collars and promote the dominance model. In my experience, there's almost always fallout with when more severe negative reinforcement is used. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we're definitely in this school of dog training.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you like to read a Bo email?
Do we have to do that dog podcast this week?
Yes.
When?
Thursday.
And we can't do this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That's annoying. What am I reading? For Mary?
Yeah, for Mary.
Regarding Bo, I hear you. I hear you so hard. I rescued my dog 5 years ago. He definitely got his issues that have somewhat slowly unpacked over time. We went through some rough and stressful times not too long ago, and I think things are getting better. I adopted him shortly after I got my first job, moved away from home, so it was just him and me. He went everywhere, and I mean everywhere, like the grocery store, a mailbox, coffee shop, sometimes to work with me in the first couple of years. We did the dog park. He was fine with rando kiddos. There was even a hot second where he could be off leash. Definitely not the case anymore. Then we moved. My job became full-time. I got married. We moved again. Life, etc. Every now and then, a little hiccup would happen, then more hiccups, and it's hard. But he's not that easy breezy pupper do all the time. I've actually gotten a lot of peace of mind listening to you describe Bo specifically as just not a restaurant or guitar shop dog. Howie has done some training, which is helpful. We've done a few manners courses, and of course the exercise helps. Really though, for Howie, things are way better since I've just started looking at him for who he is right now and who he used to be. Yes, he used to go on boats. Yes, he used to lay under my table at the coffee shop. Yes, he used to go to the bar with me and let random people pet him. He used to not snap at young children. But now, that stuff stresses him. I know him. He trusts me. And sometimes, as hard as it is, since I'm an introvert, I just have to set some hard boundaries. Sometimes people take it personally because usually I have to yell, "No, you cannot introduce your baby to my dog." So as far as your vet situation, I don't have a firm solution, of course. I can tell you that we went through vets. One vet wanted to sedate him, to chip his damn toenails. We're very
clip
happy.
His damn toenails?
Yeah, clip would be the actual word there. We're very happy with our current vet, and we have no issues. I hope you'll find one that Bo trusts, but you're not alone. I'm confident that folks as thoughtful and supportive as you will help Bo work things out.
I mean, that was another conclusion that we came to this morning. Like, Bo can get better, but like, he's going to have a threshold. He's going to have a limit.
Yeah. We're going to take him to the limit. Take him to the limit.
Where are your glasses?
I think they're on my desk.
Would you like me to get them?
If you could, that'd be nice.
Okay.
This is from an anonymous vet. Hey, I'm a vet from Australia here, responding to your last episode regarding sending Bo away to a training camp. I would absolutely say do not send Bo to a training camp, especially if his behavior has an element of anxiety. I say this with the same insistence as you telling a guy not to go to the Dominican Republic for his honeymoon. Why? Using adversary...
Here are your glasses.
Oh, thank you. Let me just put these on and make magic happen now that I can read. Using aversives, especially those that can cause physical pain, such as an e-collar or prong, set you up for a world of problems, even more so in an anxious dog. In the short term, it may inhibit the undesirable behavior, but if the problem is due to anxiety, punishment can increase anxiety and exacerbate his reactions and general anxiety for the long term. So much behavior modification depends on the owners, your knowledge, continuing training at home, reading body language, learning to recognize and preempt his triggers and motivations. This is even more important in a reactive dog like Bo. His training needs to be long-term, regular, nuanced, and tweaked as he improves. This simply can't be provided by a training camp. Please look into specialist veterinary behaviorists as they can assist him. Work out why he does what he does. Help make a behavior modification. Maybe recommend a trainer. They could also see if any anti-anxiety medication could help him. This often helps anxious dogs relax to learn a new way of coping strategies. And may not be required in the long term. I know he was bad at the vet last time, but a behaviorist and their staff are experts in handling reactive dogs and will be able to give you advice that will make a visit to them safe and less stressful. Play vet voicemail, honey.
Okay, here we go.
A lot of dog talk.
Yeah, I know.
This is not what this podcast is about.
I know. That's why we're putting it in the show notes.
Okay.
Hey, Matt and Dory. My name is Sarah. I am a registered veterinary technologist calling from Canada. I just listened to today's episode where you had expressed that you had some concerns with Bo at the vet. As somebody who works with anxious dogs at veterinary hospitals, I can tell you right now that they definitely need something to help them out sometimes. Dory, you might be happy to hear this. There is anti-anxiety medications that can actually help with animals. So what I would do is I would contact a fear-free veterinary professional. So usually these are doctors. You can Google fear-free. And then these doctors, they're trained to help dogs that are fearful, anxious, stressed in hospital, and they can probably give Bo something to help take the edge off before his vet visit. Thank you so much for your podcast. I suffer from endometriosis, and I don't know if I'm going to be a fertile myrtle or not, but fingers crossed. I'm not trying, but I'm happy.
Crossover
I
listener.
Just want to wish you all the best. Dory, I really enjoyed your book. And Matt, hopefully I'm being a helpful Canadian. Thanks so much, you guys, and best of luck. Bye.
You're doing your country's reputation proud.
So I did look up fear-free vets, and I found one near us. So I think we're going to take him there from now on.
We're going to go to the fear-free vet. That sounds like a great time.
Yeah. All right. This is from Kristen, Dan, and Starbuck, who's the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen writes, first, a lot of dog aggressive behavior, she put aggressive in quotes, is rooted in fear. I highly recommend digging into this website, fearfuldogs.com. Debbie Jacobs is an amazing trainer and runs the Fearful Dogs group on Facebook. It's public, so you can see the posts. Important to know, the dog training industry is unregulated. A lot of people claim to be behaviorists or expert trainers, but they do not use the most up-to-date science-based training techniques. You want to look for a science-based, force-free, positive reinforcement trainer. Some certifications training include CPDT, APDT, Karen Pryor, and others. You're right to be wary of doggy boot camps, e-collars, etc. Many of the boot camps use aversive techniques that can work in the short term, but also harm your dog and make reactivity and aggression worse. While trainers like Cesar Millan have helped promote rescuing and spaying and neutering dogs, he and others do not use science-based training, so please be careful. And then we did get a voicemail from someone who we got several emails from people telling us to be wary of boot camps. But we did get a pro boot. We got a couple of pro boot camp messages. And okay. I just wanted to play one in the spirit of objectivity.
Fair on both sides.
Yeah.
Hi, Matt and Dory. This is Kate. I am calling to give you some feedback on a doggy boot camp. We sent our very anxious rescue pup to a 2-week dog boot camp. We live out in Maryland, so obviously not close to where you guys are, but had really great success with it. He came back and was, one, much less anxious, two, much better about following commands. Three, I would also say that they were able to take care of some of his possessive natures because, much like maybe Bo is with you, Dory, our dog, Manny, was very possessive of me, not so much my husband, but definitely me, and would freak out when other dogs or people would get close to me. And they were able to work through some of that. The really great thing is they did not use an electronic collar. That was one of my rules as well. They also offer follow-up training sessions, and if we ever go back and board our dog there, that they will do some like follow-up training to polish up the skills again, which has gotten a little lax because we're lazy. And he didn't lose his special personality. That was a big concern of mine, was that he would come back and be like this comatose dog that just had no personality, and he was a really fun, playful puppy. And he came back a really fun, playful puppy that also knew how to sit and not jump on destroy the blinds and not jump on the counters and the tables as much as he was
counters.
Prior to that. Destroy the entire house when we went for work. So I hope this is helpful, and hope you guys are able to find a solution for Bo and his anxiety. I feel for you. It could also be because he doesn't want a human sibling. At least that's what Manny keeps telling us. So thanks. Bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So, there you go.
So there's that. I believe there's one more dog email.
There sure is. It's from Ryan. We have a tiny Jug Gertrude, which is a pug Jack Russell mix, who is excited to see anything that moves and will bark and growl constantly until they get to lick their faces. Completely harmless, yet often put in time out at doggy daycare. Our other dog, Tinsel, was a rescue who came from Louisiana. We're in Rhode Island and adopted her at a local shelter group slash rescue. It is incredibly shy, skittish, and anxious. We've slowly rehabilitated her over time with the direction of my wife, who is a former dog trainer and dog groomer. By regularly introducing new people to Tinsel with lots of treats on neutral ground, going on woodland hikes with her pack, our close friends with their own dogs, and routinely exposing Tinsel to her biggest stressors slash fears while instructing her to do a job or focusing her on another task, she came out of her shell a bit. One of the largest factors in her improvement was actually Gertrude. As she's confident and socially healthy dog and the alpha, she definitely helped lead Tinsel in the right direction. If you're thinking of adopting another dog, adopting another dog is an option to give Bo some buddy system training, or even friending another human being with a confident dog and going on hikes and walks, try to make sure that the dog is a female. Canines are maternal packs. And typically, the eldest female is the natural alpha. A strong, confident female dog of any age should help Bo in his most anxious states. It's always a working issue, though, so don't give up. Tinsel still paces around the apartment whenever I pick up my guitar, Fender American Strat, single humbucker with a Seymour Duncan Blues rail, duckbucker, and a 59 patent applied for pickup. That's a Gibson pickup, guys. Locking tuners, ball bearing, LSR rolling nut system, and the trem rested hard to the body with four high tension springs. I keep all the springs in, bro.
Whoa.
That'll stay in tune better.
He really went to town on that.
He really did.
Guitar stuff.
I like a blues rail. I've never played a duck bucker. How is that, my friend? Let me know. Locking tuners. How much of this stuff did you add? I assume the locking tuners and the nut. And I'm guessing the pickups as well. Single humbucker. Was it a single humbucker when you got it? Email me. Let me know. This is a...
All right. Well, that concludes the bow portion of the podcast.
28 minutes in. We're
thank
getting
you,
to IVF.
Thank you all for writing in. Before we get to the email, though, I want to mention an article that was going around on social media this week and came up in the Facebook group a couple times about kind of an investigation into IVF. And it talked mostly about this one doctor in the Valley who...
This Valley?
Yes. Uh-huh. They put three of the wrong embryos into a woman and then... He did a DNC supposedly without telling her that that's what he was doing. But the article more broadly was about the tendency of fertility clinics to put more than one embryo into women regularly in order to up their stats
on the reg. Yeah.
So there was a bunch of discussion about it. Yeah, I mean, I think that, as discussed on this podcast, the first doctor that we went to, when I asked her how many embryos she put in, she said two or three. And to me, that was a little bit of a red flag. And we ended up going to a different doctor who, you know, both of the doctors in the practice that we're in now have said pretty strongly that they only want to put in one. And I'm older. You know, usually I think it's definitely recommended for women under 35 to only put in one. But I think the tendency now is to try to just do one. I wish in the article they had talked to clinics that really only do one. Like I feel like they were a little fear-mongery.
It's a newspaper. What do you expect?
Well, it's not a newspaper.
Well, it's, you know.
But no, I mean, it's certainly an issue. And like a couple people commented it on Facebook. One woman was like, I'm pregnant with my second set of twins and I didn't want to put in two embryos the second time. And the doctor was very insistent that we do two. And, you know, that kind of sucks.
But at the end of the day, ladies out there listening, you can tell your doctor to fuck off. And just put one in.
I know, but I think it's hard when a doctor is like telling you that it's the best medical recommendation, and you know it's hard to go against a doctor.
It does not make medical sense.
Yes, I understand. I'm just telling you why I think it might be hard for some people to like go against what their doctor is supposedly recommending, even if the doctor is doing it for perhaps not the best motives. Because like there's a lot of complications with twins. It's a much more dangerous pregnancy. You have a higher risk of a premature baby and
less sleep.
And yeah, I mean, I think it's good if this article gets people talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
So
check out the article, check out the Facebook group to see the discussion happening over there.
Yep.
Well, I suppose we should get to some email about baby trying.
Yep.
Oh, I'm going to read it.
No,
she looked
read
at
it.
Me. She just side-eyed me.
I'll read it.
No.
Give it to me.
Nope, I'm reading it.
No.
You side-eyed me.
Because you have an attitude today.
What? Honey.
Give me the emails. Give it to me.
This is from Erin.
I'm at a crossroads here. Oh, me too.
What do you want to do?
And wondering what you or your listeners might have to say about my situation. I'm 41. My partner is 46. We've been dealing with this infertility stuff for 3 years. There's nothing wrong with us per se, but my eggs are few and it seems like they are all old and rotten. I got pregnant naturally after 9 months of trying, then miscarried. Went down the medical route and became pregnant again a year later from an IUI, then miscarried again. I've had 4 IUIs and 3 IVFs so far. But I'm having terrible results with the IVF. I only get 2 to 4 eggs each time. One to do fertilize the first couple times, and we did fresh transfers, but they didn't work. I was crushed the last time when none of the eggs fertilized. My doctor has been very aggressive, and each time he adjusts the protocol in hopes I will respond better. It feels like insanity to keep going down this path with these terrible results. For the first time, I'm realizing that this really may not be in the cards for me, and that I might need to let it go. Not exactly the same as giving up in my book. I've evaluated other options, including the clinics that you pay a flat rate for unlimited IVF and possibly your money back if you don't get pregnant, and also the egg donor route. My partner isn't really into adopting, which I respect. The reality is that I don't want to do any of these other options. I can't bear doing unlimited IVF or spending another year or two dealing with this roller coaster and working with an egg donor. Plus, I don't want to spend half my life savings to do it. I should have enough money left in my fertility benefits to have one more IVF covered by insurance, so I think I can muster the strength to do it one last time. I just started going to a therapist and shared my struggle. I told her I was really leaning towards one more IVF, then letting it go, still trying naturally, and just leaving it up to the universe. I've been doing a lot of journaling, visualizing, meditating, etc. I'm trying to get to a point where I can be at peace with whatever the outcome may be, which is tough because I'm completely attached to the idea that I would be a mother. I'm trying to think of the positives of a life without children because I really do love my life with the exception of the infertility BS. The therapist said that she thinks I need to take agency over the decision of whether I want to be a mother or not because she fears if I leave it to the universe, I might be drifting in this murkiness until I hit menopause and then will be disappointed. I felt like saying, bitch, I made the decision already. I want to be a mother, but can't control the outcome. She said, some women in your position just agree that they won't be moms and get on the pill and feel a lot better. This infuriated me. Just because I may not want to keep going through IVF hell doesn't mean I want to get on the pill or don't want to be a mom. Oh, what happened here? Oh, okay. So I just want to know what you think of all this. Everyone says the moment that you let go is the moment it will happen. Who the hell knows? Any words of wisdom for me?
Sounds like she's made up her mind without knowing she made up her mind.
What do you think she's made up her mind to do?
One more round of IVF.
Right. But then what?
I think if she's made up her mind to do one more round of IVF, then she has to realize that that might be it.
Right.
For her.
I think maybe she should find a new therapist.
You can't keep finding new medical professionals until they do what you want.
Yeah, but...
However...
This is the first...
A second opinion is always enjoyable.
It's not like she's gone to... She didn't say, I've gone to 10 therapists and they all sucked. She just started seeing a therapist.
You're also 41. That's not that old.
It's not that old, but... It, you know, the odds of using your own eggs for a pregnancy at 41 are not amazing.
Yeah.
I know your partner said he doesn't want to do adoption, but I mean, would he be maybe open to embryo adoption?
That's certainly a path. I mean, egg donor is not as expensive as adoption.
It's more expensive than embryo adoption.
Yes. But at least they'd have... I feel like this husband's hung up on something with the adoption thing.
Mm.
And I feel like it might be that he can't love something that is not from his DNA.
Mm.
So, if you do egg donor...
I see what you're saying.
You get a little spot of that dude in there.
I guess I would just say... You have to weigh the wanting to be a mother at all costs versus probably, honestly, at this point, probably not being able to do it with your eggs unless this last round of IVF works.
There is also the possibility if you've been going to the same doctor for all of these rounds.
Yeah, maybe a different IVF doctor.
Perhaps a different IVF doctor. Might give you an entirely different treatment.
Yep.
And those results, whatever they may be from that round, might be promising.
Yep.
And give you the will to continue.
Yep.
Down that path. But at the end of the day, it's your body, and if you don't want to keep doing it, then
yeah,
don't.
It's so hard on all of us. But
yeah, have you thought about adopting a dog?
Keep us posted.
I'm sure also we have listeners who've been in similar situations or are in similar situations who will hopefully write in so that we can help her.
Yeah. This feels like a really good question for the Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest also maybe heading over there. All right. This is from Kimmy and James. And they say, I just wanted to thank you for this podcast. I heard about it on a Smodcast that Matt was a guest on.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I just finished our first round of IVF. We've been married since 2008 and have been trying for a baby the last 5 years. We've had two miscarriages and several rounds of IUI. I'm 35 and my husband is 37. This whole time we were living under the assumption that my husband had lazy sperm, but it appears I may also have dumb eggs. 19 eggs were retrieved, 14 were mature. Out of the 14, 7 were fertilized and 2 made it to transfer, although the 2 that we did transfer stopped developing after day 3. We did not have any embryos for freezing. With our latest visit with my doctor, he suggested that we may want to consider donor eggs, but we could try another round and see. This is very similar to the previous email. We are going to try one more time. Donor eggs could be very expensive. He told us that the eggs would likely have to come from the United States and could cost up to $20,000 Canadian. Oh yeah, these people are Canadian. Yikes. Also, I'm half Japanese and part of me would like for my baby to be a bit Japanese. Apparently, Japanese eggs are pretty rare. To possibly improve the quality of my eggs, I'm on DHEA and CoQ10.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this is a bit controversial, but could help improve the quality. I've been taking CoQ10. It is worth a try. We absolutely love listening to your podcast as none of our friends are trying for babies or going through IVF. We wish you luck on expanding your family. Matt, I now listen to Phoebe and we'll check out Talk Salad. Dory, I'm enjoying your book very much and we'll review it when finished.
Wow.
Also, we signed up for HelloFresh with your coupon code.
Thank you for using the coupon code.
While going through IVF, we've been eating a lot of feelings and we thought this might help. Thank you so much, Kimmy and James.
Thank you, my Canadian friends. My wife just got up unannounced to hand me something that looks to be on topic. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you. Well, we should talk to her before we jump into this ad. It seems rude to just say, well, since you mentioned HelloFresh.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, she wasn't really asking a question.
Yeah, but she was saying that it might be her eggs and her husband's sperm.
Right.
And that she might need a donor egg and that there aren't many Japanese
eggs. Japanese.
There's a lot of information.
Wrinkle there. Is interesting.
Yes. It is. It's, I guess you just, yeah, you want a little bit of your heritage in your baby, regardless of whether or not you're making it, I guess, right?
Yeah.
This is a rough life, this IVF thing.
Yeah.
It's not easy on anybody.
Nope.
Well, I hope it works out for you, and I hope you have a quarter Japanese baby.
Me too.
If you need help finding Japanese eggs, I would not know where to begin to help.
Okay.
So.
Yes.
You know, this last week, this little recorder recorded 5 different podcasts.
Damn.
I know. And it's falling apart. I cracked the screen, broke the headphone jack.
Oh, dear.
It ran out of space on the memory card in the middle of a podcast.
Oh, no.
It's gone through a lot.
Oh, poor little guy.
Thank you, everybody, for putting up with us.
All right. This is from Fred and Issa. Mm-hmm. I have a question for Matt.
Yes.
You've made a few Cheers references in the last few episodes, mm-hmm. and I wonder if this crossed your mind. Mm. I grew up on sitcoms, and I remembered an episode where Sam and Rebecca are trying to have a baby, and there's a fertility issue. Mm-hmm. I looked it up, and I think the episode is called I'm Okay, You're Defective. Mm-hmm. Rebecca comes back after some research with underpants lined with a freezing gel. So I'm wondering, since this took place in the 90s, and I'm assuming the writers didn't just come up with that out of thin air, how is the heat factor down there not more known and taken into consideration?
It's a great question.
You guys should come to Montreal on Points or Not. Great food to be had. Drop us a line if you do.
Yeah, that episode ends. Sam gets his fertility results, and he has this real conflicted moment of like whether or not he should look at the fertility results.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, because Sam is, he's all about machismo.
He's a man's man.
He's a ladies' man.
He's a ladies' man.
And he doesn't want to be thought of as infertile. So Frasier convinces him not to look at it, and he'll hold on to it, the results. And then they end the episode by flashing forward to Frasier's death, and Lilith is there with a grown Frederick, and the last will and testament is being read, and they pull it out, and it's Sam's sperm results.
That's pretty funny.
And then Lilith goes, "That damn bar." So, you know, if that's canon, eventually Lilith and Frasier get back together, which did never happen on the 11 years of Frasier. So
interesting. Well, do you have any thoughts on the freezing gel underpants?
Do you know what I'm gonna do?
What?
I'm gonna ask. I'm having lunch on Wednesday with Ken Levine, who wrote
Hollywood and Levine,
who wrote many episodes of Cheers and a few episodes of Frasier. And I'll ask him where that story came from.
That is a great idea.
And I will report back to you guys.
Thank you.
Next week.
I appreciate that. All right.
Dory is doing some editing in real time.
So, this is from Benji.
Benji from the Howard Stern Show, Benji?
No.
Okay.
My name is Benji. I discovered your podcast from recommendation by our couples therapist about a month ago. # marriage goals.
That's something.
That's a lot. At the time, we were trying to conceive for a while, and our therapist heard about your podcast and specifically recommended it because Matt was able to talk about the male perspective through this process, which you normally don't hear about.
It's true.
That is true. My wife insisted that I get my parts checked out first because it is supposed to be much easier and less intrusive. Mm-hmm. After multiple semen analysis tests, a heavy groping physical exam, yep. an ultrasound,
yep.
a blood test,
uh-huh.
a post-ejaculatory urine analysis, nice. What I have dubbed the pee-jerk tinkle test.
I have not had one of those. That's impressive. Go ahead.
And a rectal ultrasound. A
rectal ultrasound.
To no. guide a very large needle into my right vas deferens. So much for less intrusive. Oh, boy.
So it sounds like they found some stuff. Having to do all of those things.
Correct. We're getting to that. We discovered that I have no sperm in my semen because I have a block on my right vas deferens and a missing left vas deferens due to not having a left kidney.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Basically, my plumbing is terrible down there, a missing left pipe and a clogged right pipe, so my sperm is stuck in my testicles. I did not know any of this before, the lack of sperm in my semen, the missing left vas deferens, or not having a freaking kidney.
You didn't know you didn't have a left kidney?
No.
This is amazing.
I'm 32, and in all of my previous blood work and physicals, which included testicular cancer checks, not one doctor noticed important body parts missing. Apparently, I found out that missing a kidney and having it be undiagnosed is actually quite common. About 1 in 750 people are born with a missing kidney, mostly men and mostly the left.
Weird.
But having a missing vas deferens and a blocked right vas deferens is very rare. My wife and I are still processing all of this and have a whole lot of questions and emotions. After being told we should have genetic tests because, quote, knowledge is power, why don't we screen for some of these basic things in physical exams? Why couldn't we know this sooner so we could save for treatment by not paying for birth control since I was shooting blanks all this time?
That's crazy.
Fair question. While I still need more tests, after 6 weeks of tests, I still do not know if I even have usable sperm to extract. It seems most likely that we will need to do IVF since surgery to unblock my vas deferens is risky/may not be effective, and sperm needs to be in semen to be effective for other treatments like IUI. Unfortunately, both of our insurances do not cover infertility, so my wife, the planner, is already looking into medical tourism options abroad.
This is mind-blowing.
A lot.
There's a lot happening down there.
Yeah.
I think I find it amazing that you never at any point had to have an ultrasound or a CAT scan or an MRI at any point in your life.
Have I had a full body?
I mean, a full body scan is crazy. You probably haven't done one of those, but yeah. Like you've had MRIs.
Have I?
I don't know. Shouldn't you?
I've had a CAT scan when I had a stress fracture. If I had an MRI, that is a really good question. I feel like I have. But
well, I have had multiple MRIs many times in my life. Sometimes for cancer reasons, sometimes for...
Wait, you had cancer?
It was a long story. A lot of... I was in and out quite a bit as a teenager. Hi, I'm Matt Myra, your husband.
Did you have cancer?
No, but I had a lot of things cut out of me.
Mm. I did know that because you have scars in various places.
I do. I had a horrible back pain as a kid, even as a teenager, as a young one, as they say, scoliosis, bad, like my vertebrae, you know, I have, an arthritic spine.
Oh.
And I have bulging discs between L5 and L6.
Okay.
And it was kind of bad, and then it got okay, and then it got really bad about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, where it was impossible for me to sit.
Oh, God.
Without sharp, sharp pain. I could only stand. And walk, which is fine. I mean, I could work. I could go to the Genius Bar and work. It was no problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, I've had a ton of MRIs, so I know everything that's inside of me.
Yeah, but this is a lot. But
you never had like a football injury or something. This is crazy. Not.
But also, I mean, you can live with one kidney. Obviously, it's more the blocked vas deferens. That's like interesting to me. Like, yeah, why would that have come up? But it, but like.
But I think if the missing a kidney was known to the doctors.
Oh, then they might have looked into other stuff.
Then they might have probably been like, "Well, let's get you to
right
go in this cup."
Quite a story.
It's crazy.
There's a P.S. We are a split household on the chit chat. I love it, but my wife wants you to just talk IVF, even though, as I've pointed out, she loves Instapotting, especially making bone broth, The Crown, Gilmore Girls, The Goldbergs, being the planner in the relationship, and also constantly gets distracted to love on our dog.
This is sounding like she just resents how much we're like her. She's going to hate this episode.
Totally. PPS, Matt, where have you been all my life?
Right here, buddy.
I've been binging this podcast, but I've never heard of your other podcast before.
Oh, well.
Where should I begin?
Good God.
The Next Conversation, James Bonding, Phoebe, the beginning of Nerdist. Where would you recommend a fan to begin in your podcast universe?
Well, you know, my podcast universe actually predates Nerdist by 80 episodes of something called Comedy and Everything Else with Todd Glass and Jimmy Dore.
Whoa.
There's a pre-Nerdist podcast, Matt Myra. I've been doing podcasts longer than Chris Hardwick. So, God, I don't know. I mean, if you wanted to, like, I feel like the journey.
The Matt Myra journey?
Matt Myra journey really begins, I mean, I guess with episode one of Nerdist, but there's so many episodes
of Nerdist. There's like 800.
Nerdist. Yes, I know. You could learn about me probably quicker with Phoebe, which is just me and Scott Mosier. The premise of that podcast is that Scott Mosier and I weren't sure if we should be friends. So we tried to figure out on the show if we should be friends or not.
Spoiler.
It worked out.
I've also had people tell me that they listened to your episode of You Made It Weird.
I try not to recommend that one. I honestly don't love that that's out there.
It's kind of crazy that it's out there.
Yeah, that's about a breakup with long-time girlfriend, and it's a different time now.
That's true.
You know, we're older. She has a baby. I just like
that's a lot.
Don't need to drag that shit through.
I mean, I would say, if I may, Phoebe is a great suggestion because unless you're like into Star Trek or James Bond, or he didn't mention Tuck Salad or Frasier.
Yeah,
like it's interesting, but maybe not that interesting. Right. Whereas Phoebe is more general.
Yes, Phoebe is certainly a nice general place to start. And your wife hates this part of the podcast. We're talking about something that is not trying to have a baby. But please keep us posted on what the hell's going on with you.
Yeah. Wow. All right. From Irene, Here's my situation. I'm 37. My husband is 40. At 28 years old, I was diagnosed with a pituitary tumor. I had most of it removed surgically. As a result of the tumor...
I really was thinking this was Irene from Real World Seattle who had Lyme disease and got slapped by that black guy.
It's not.
Okay.
As a result of the tumor, my hormone levels are well below where they need to be. Because of this, I do not get a period. In January, we met with a fertility clinic and was told IVF would be my best option for trying to conceive. I was put on Provera to get me to have a period so that they could do an ultrasound on me. Well, it's now the end of May and no period, even after 3 rounds of Provera. I did get my period 4 times in 2014 while trying Clomid. My gyno had me on estradiol and Provera to get my period to come. I did tell the fertility clinic this. I'm now just waiting for the next step on what they want me to do now. It's a bit frustrating just waiting around to see if IVF is even going to happen. And in doing research, I've had a hard time finding others with a similar situation as me. I just really wanted to put this out there to see if there are others out there with infertility caused by a pituitary tumor.
I hope it's benign.
It sounds like that part is done. It's just the aftermath of it is kind of shitty. So I think she just wants to know if there's others out there with this issue.
Are there others out there?
And if so, how did you deal with it?
It's great. I love how we like set up our listeners with other listeners who have gone through similar things.
I'm going to play voicemail from someone who is talking about not ovulating.
Do it up.
All right.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more.
Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, Dorian, Matt. I have a somewhat interesting predicament. We've done a bunch of testing, my husband and I. His sperm is great. He has super sperm. My uterus looks good. I make a lot of follicles. I've got, like, this month I've got 12 on my left and 15 on my right.
That's a lot.
My problem with infertility is I, for some reason, unknown to everyone, is that I do not ovulate every month. Some months I do and some months I don't. So I was just wondering if anyone knew of some natural way to make myself ovulate instead of going straight to drugs. That would be great. If drugs are my only choice, then of course that's what I'll do. But I'm hoping that there's a natural way to make all these follicles release an egg or two. Any advice on that would be great. All right, thanks, guys.
I mean, lots of non-ovulating happening.
We're just sending smoke signals out to other people.
Exactly. That's what I love about this podcast.
If you're not ovulating and you know how to make yourself ovulate, my guess is it has something to do with bone broth. Everything seems to.
And acupuncture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're still going to acupuncture. Even though you're not going through IVF.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I go once a week.
Yeah. What's that all about?
You know, I do think it relaxes me.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried yoga? It's very relaxing.
I love yoga.
Oh, that's weird.
And I was trying to get you into yoga like 2 years ago.
But you didn't have the right in.
I know. I now know I didn't have the right in.
You didn't have a way for me to just do it in my office quietly by myself.
But I also didn't have a former wrestler.
Well, I mean, we can't all have a former wrestler.
You know what I've realized about you, Matt, is you like to have a person you can kind of like get into. Like you got into Sagi.
I sure did. I love Sagi.
You got into your old trainer, Tom. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you like to have a coach / mentor in your physical journey.
Yeah.
So sure. I think you like having this wrestler.
I wish I had like a runner coach, like someone who would coach me on how to train for a half marathon.
There's a running store very close to our house. I'm sure you could go there and ask them for suggestions.
I'd buy two pairs of sneakers from them.
Yeah. You won't be able to make it because you don't get out of work early enough, but every Tuesday night they have a runner's club that goes running in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, someday.
But I bet you could ask them for suggestions and they would have suggestions
right
for
now
you.
I'm using the Nike Run app on my watch.
How do you like it?
I've only used it twice. I've only been running twice, but I've been doing yoga. I will say, though, since the yoga thing, after the run, and then I did a bunch of yoga, and then I did yoga, and then I ran, I had no leg soreness the next day.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I feel like after the first run, before you had done the yoga...
Well, I did try to go 3 miles.
You, like, couldn't walk.
I tried to go 3 miles.
Like, you were in so much pain.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, again, I feel like whenever I start talking about us, I feel like people start checking out.
I don't.
All right.
I've heard from I don't read all of the emails that are like, I like the chit chat. Because like that would be a little, you know, self-congratulatory. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people do enjoy the chit chat.
Congrats. You're semi-interesting.
Yeah. I did enjoy this email from Eric Daw.
I am a big fan of Eric Daw.
Thanks for the continued shout outs for the Fret Files podcast.
Oh, there's another shout out for you, Eric Daw.
I'd listen to more episodes, but my sperm count is off the charts as evidenced by my two strapping young boys.
Yes.
But seriously, nice podcast made for a fun listen. That's the mark of a good podcast when you're not interested particularly in the subject, but enjoyed the hell out of the banter. See, Eric likes the banter.
Eric likes the banter, but for some reason we can't get you into the Fret Files podcast, honey.
And the hosts. You two have a great dynamic and are very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
As with our crossover of infertile guitar repair junkies, we're probably going to take over the internet soon. Thanks for the shouts. Keep up the good work.
Yeah.
Loved that.
I loved that too. And I'm going to, I would like to write Eric back. They've moved from Seattle to Iowa.
Oh, wow.
Or Idaho. One of the two.
Hmm.
They're not very similar, but.
No.
And he's going to be able to be building guitars again on a regular basis. So.
Oh, boy. I see where this is going.
I think it's
I see where this is going, everyone.
Time for Matt to order a pinup custom guitar, blonde.
Well,
S style.
You know what Dory says. One in, one out.
Yeah, those are her rules.
And you have one out that you need to think about.
Thank you, Eric Daw.
Yeah. This is a quickie from Becca. This is a compliment for Matt that I just wanted to read on the air. Partially based on the advice Matt gave another listener a while back, I've decided I'm going to go back to school to finish my bachelor's degree. I left 12 years ago to deal with some mental health issues, and it's been something I've been wanting to finish since. If all goes well, I should be finishing in the summer of 2019 at the age of 36.
That is not that far away.
No. I loved that, though.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
Yeah.
Partially. I'm glad I could partially help.
And then Robert G was wondering if you have any recommendations for books or YouTube channels that help people with songwriting and or music theory.
It's funny you ask. Music theory is one of those things that I am endlessly looking for good resources on.
Oh, interesting.
There aren't a ton.
You know, I took a bunch of music theory classes when I was like ages 10 to 13.
Did it help you?
Yeah, I thought
like
it was really...
how many sharps are in G? The key of G?
One.
Correct. What are the chords you could play in G?
G...
Anyway, the point is... Yeah. My point is that it's...
It helped me with that kind
of
stuff.
It's crazy. Like...
Yeah.
The... all the, you know, the melodic and the diatonic and the pentatonic. It's just like, for some reason, I could never quite wrap my head
GCE.
Around. Sure. It's hard. I can't wrap my head around it, around what to tell him, because I wish I had a great answer for him, and I don't, because there is nothing great out there for music theory. There's a lot of guitar theory books that are great. There's one... Fretboard Logic is a book that will help you with guitar theory and fretboard theory, which will in turn help you with music theory. I took music theory in college. I did, and I checked out. I was like, this is so... I can't do it.
Yeah. If I still had my old books, I would... But I don't. Yeah. That was a long time ago. All right. And this is from James talking about the 6-day proposal. Remember that?
Yes.
Matt's comment about potentially being progressively disappointed as the days pass made me realize that this was exactly the setup of a classic logic paradox. If you want to surprise your fiancé with a proposal on one of 6 days, you can't do it on the last day, because once the 5th day has come and gone, it won't be a surprise. It would have to be the 6th day.
Yeah.
So the sixth day is eliminated, but then it can't be the 5th day, because with the 6th already out, you know it'd have to be the 5th, and so on. And yet, if the proposal happens around the 3rd day, it's still a surprise. Of course, in the original version of the paradox, it's an unexpected hanging, because logicians are a morbid bunch. This version is much more upbeat. And then he links to the Wikipedia page for the unexpected hanging paradox.
Oh, it was a paradox.
It was a paradox.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah. So you were really onto something.
I try to be onto something as much as I can be. We do have time for another email if you'd like to read one from your discarded pile.
Well, it's a very long email.
Oh, how long?
It's...
Wow.
Well, I lost the beginning of it. You know, we'll do it on the next episode.
Okay. This is just coming in a little short.
Is that all right? I thought we were running. All right. You know what? I will just read.
It's just if we're, I'm going to shove ads down people's throat. I want to give them a full episode of fun.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. Okay, wait. Actually, this is the beginning of the email. I wasn't sure if it was. Okay. Guys, buckle up.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everyone who has chimed in to say that the mother's mental well-being is important to consider when deciding whether or not to stop a medication while pregnant. I've been on an SSRI, fluoxetine, Prozac, for over half my life, and for a few years before trying to get pregnant, I would ask various doctors I saw what their thoughts were on taking antidepressants, excuse me, while pregnant, since I knew it would be a decision that I might one day face. Turns out they all had different ideas about it. One doctor would say I could stay on fluoxetine, no problem. Another would recommend stopping all medications just to be safe. The third would just make the shrug emoticon face.
Mm-hmm.
Side note, I live in Canada, so going to see all these doctors was more feasible than it might be in the U.S.
There's so many Canadian listeners that we should just live there.
I mean, okay.
Continue.
To compound the confusion, there aren't any good studies out there about SSRIs and birth defects because you can't ethically test pharmaceuticals on pregnant people. So a lot of the studies are just guesswork based on other factors. If someone out there has a good study that counters what I'm saying, please tell me about it. So after talking to doctors and reading what research was out there, I figured I just had to make the call on my own, and I decided to stop taking the fluoxetine. And I wish I had stayed on it.
Interesting.
I stopped the medication about 6 months before pulling the goalie, and those months leading up to the time I got pregnant were some of the most depressed and anxiety-ridden months of my life.
That's awful.
My body was trying to learn how to be a body not on fluoxetine for the first time in years, and I also had a lot of stuff going on at work and with wedding planning that really stressed me out. Yeah, going off antidepressants while planning a wedding is a terrible idea, but that's another topic for another podcast. I was a mess, and while I was seeing a therapist and getting acupuncture and doing meditation, it was really hard to manage everything. Weirdly, though, once I did get pregnant, after the first few months, my depression subsided, and I actually felt better mentally while pregnant than I had in a long time. I've heard of this happening to some people where the pregnancy hormones impact their mental health in either direction, and I was fortunate to experience an upswing. However, I knew that this wasn't going to be permanent and that once the baby was born, I would be at risk for postpartum depression given my history. So I went back on fluoxetine a few months after the birth and have felt pretty good ever since. Having been through all of this, I now know that if we try to have another child, I will stay on the fluoxetine because the disruption of going off the first time around was too much. My takeaway from this experience and my advice to those trying to decide whether or not to go off antidepressants while pregnant is to consider the evidence you have at hand, doctors, studies, even if they aren't great, etc., and make the call on your own based on your own instincts and risk assessment. No one doctor or study will give you a perfect answer. This attitude is inspired in part by a book called Expecting Better by Emily Oster, which considers all kinds of decisions pregnant people face, staying on or going off meds, eating sushi or soft cheese or deli meats, having the occasional beer or glass of wine, and presents the available data so readers can make their own judgment calls instead of trying to follow hard and fast rules that don't exist.
It's good advice.
I thought it was very good advice.
If you get pregnant, I'll stop taking antidepressants.
You're not on antidepressants.
Yeah. Damn.
So.
Logic puzzle.
We do have one more voicemail.
Great. Let's play it.
Okay.
Hello. It's the Duke of Bridgewater.
Oh my God, he's back.
These past weeks, I've taken it upon myself to educate the Church of England on in vitro fertilization.
Whoa.
Now, I must say, the Archbishop had a few reservations about the process, but I said we didn't break away from the Catholic Church for nothing. So, if you hear of a pregnancy outbreak in the 1750s among Anglican nuns, I hope you know that your podcast was in part to blame. Well, cheerio then. I must continue with my work.
I wish there was really some way that this Duke was getting our podcast in the 1700s and was able to somehow call into our show.
Oh, I know. That would be cool.
That is a delightful. That is Paul Charles. The Duke of Bridgewater.
Oh, it's Paul Charles.
Well, that was, I believe, who I gave that fact to.
Duke of
Bridgewater.
Right.
Although
it's not necessarily him.
I'm not saying it is him, but it is someone who I think looked up the real Duke of Bridgewater.
Right,
such a thing. Regardless, there's a time rift happening, and he's getting our podcast.
Yes, I enjoy it very much.
Whew. What a time. I know. What a time to be alive.
Yep. So, It's time for everyone's favorite part of the podcast.
Everyone's favorite part, Boston.
The donors. And I just want to remind everyone that we have a new Patreon page at patreon.com/excellentadventure, where you can donate for as little as $1 a month. And it is super helpful. We have a number of reward tiers.
Do you have it in you to support the podcast?
Yeah. Do you have it in you to support the podcast? Oh, I just remembered. I decided we were going to change the name of donors to supporters.
Yes.
Because I think that's a more accurate representation.
Yeah, you're supporting.
They're supporting the podcast.
You're supporting things like when I break headphone jacks on Zoom H6Ns and drop microphones.
For $1 to $9 a month, you get one fun fact read on the podcast during the first month of your first donation. For $10 to $24 a month, you get a new fun fact every month read on the podcast for the duration of your monthly donation, plus an exclusive photo and caption of us, Dory, Matt, and Beau, once a month. For $25 to $49 a month, you get a monthly half-hour bonus mini-episode exclusive to the Patreon donors at this level and above, plus all rewards from previous tiers. And for $50 a month and above, you get a personalized voice message from Matt and or Dory and a personalized signed copy of Startup, a novel, plus all rewards from previous tiers.
Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure is made possible by listeners like you.
Yes. And, you know, if you don't want to donate on Patreon, or sorry, if you don't want to support us on Patreon, you can still support us on PayPal and Venmo by going to excellentadventure.com and clicking on the donate tab. And thank you. Or I should change that to the support tab.
Jesus. But then people are going to be looking for technical support if the website's not working.
Good point. All right. I'll keep it for donors. Okay. So this week's supporters are Sarah Allred.
Sarah knows the words to every Fall Out Boy record.
Carrie Mills.
Carrie went to equestrian camp every summer as a teenager. Her horse was named Batman the Horse.
Neil Weiner.
Neil invented a method of cheating at 21 that is different than card counting and totally illegal. He has been banned from every casino in Nevada.
Marcus Yeager.
Marcus's favorite flavor of Ben and Jerry's is fish food. He wishes it was spelled with a PH.
Melanie Baltazar.
Melanie is in early talks to reboot Punky Brewster for Hulu.
Ooh, get at me, Melody. Chelsea Rosger. Rosger.
Yes, Rosger.
Rosger.
Chelsea realized at an early age that she had the ability to move things with her mind. She realized at a later age that she was mistaken.
Our friend Paul Charles.
Paul likes to close his eyes every night, put his head under the covers, and pretend he's in a spaceship.
Wait, did I skip
Kristen? You skipped Kristen, but I can tell you that Kristen's favorite movie, Kristen Zeplinski, thank you. Kristen's favorite movie is The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, okay. A donation in the name of the miniature schnauzer Mochi.
Mochi refuses to believe that dogs on TV aren't actually inside the television.
Jessica Wayne.
Jessica is a sharpshooter, having won a number of competitions with other Old West gunfighters.
And our old friend Andrew Steinle.
Andrew has never made a satisfactory salad at a salad bar.
Oh, it's a skill.
But I don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that particular fact I've given to someone else because it is something I cannot do as a human being.
I don't think you have.
All right.
Well, that wraps it up.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast.
Thank you.
Sorry about all the ads, guys.
Don't be sorry.
I'm not sorry. It's okay. We'll get through it together.
I think we did get through it.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We did. The podcast is over. Yep. Thanks for listening. Email us, Matt and Dory at gmail.com, doryandmatt@gmail.com.
Call us at 413-461-BABY. Leave us a review on iTunes so we can get that bonus.
So you can get a bonus episode. Check out the Fret Files. It's going to be weekly in a few months because they now can focus on the podcast and building guitars. Very excited.
Cool.
About that.
All right. Great. And thanks to everyone for all your Beau suggestions.
And thank you for listening and putting up with our dog.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Let's get a silver bullet trailer and have a baby.